Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, avoid O'Hare Airport Tuesday. That's the new strike day for the underpaid service workers. And now that Fidel is dead and Donald is president, what happens to everyone's travel plans to Cuba? We have an update.
You wouldn't think outdoorsmen need travel tips, but indeed, Mr. Bob Sims, Mr. Outdoorsman around here, joins us at 3:20 to make you a smarter camper.
Support animals on airplanes are becoming quite the hot topic, and at 3:35 we talk about the pros and cons of bringing animals to the airport and on board the plane. I am going to make some enemies, I think, in that segment.
At 3:50 we take you on a magical journey on the world's largest scavenger hunt. Would you spend big bucks to travel around the world in search of adventure? You know what? I bet you would.
Black Friday is history. Cyber Monday is just around the corner. Welcome to Travel Guys Sunday Afternoon. Take your shoes off, kick back, and be entertained with the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. I'm a traveling man, king of the road. Riding on the city of New Orleans.
Kicks out on the Route 66.
That's entertainment.
Let's go on with the show.
Here it is, another adventure with the Travel Guys, Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations on a fabulous Sunday.
Is that what this is?
Yes,
another
it is.
Another adventure?
It is an adventure.
I'm going to take my jacket off and stay for the whole hour then.
There you go. Why don't you do that?
Yeah, I'll just go ahead. Take
your shoes off as well.
Flying all over the coast this
yeah,
morning.
Yeah, Mark, we just jumping had a couple of couple of interesting travel stories there that Carolyn mentioned that, you know, a lot of folks coming and going, and it went pretty well.
Yeah.
And now I know that
as long as you didn't go to the mall in Modesto, it went pretty well. Sounds like.
You know, I'm from Modesto, and
I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
Those rowdy Modesto people, I know one of them.
I was very surprised. Vintage Fair Mall is a wonderful place, and it's not.
Well, you can go online and look at it. We don't have it hooked up to our radio, but while Carolyn was talking about it, I was watching it. They were kind of going at it there in the mall.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well,
speaking of going at it, how were you? I understand you flew in from out of town this morning.
I did.
How was that?
Southwest Airlines, those people don't miss too many things. And this morning, what Southwest decided to do was they put on some extra flights in certain cities with where they could do short segments. So out of Seattle this morning, there were four or five extra flights, very early flights. And I noticed that when we got here in Sacramento, we landed at 6:35 this morning from Seattle, that the Portland flight had already beaten us. So so things started early. But I will say this. When you catch a plane at 5:20, I'm staying at an airport hotel, so I was only about 15 minutes away. So I didn't get up till actually about 3 o'clock. But most people, if they had to drive and stuff, that catching a 5:20 flight is practically like taking a red eye.
No, it's not a fun one.
No, but one thing I will say is that the people who got up and took early flights this morning at airports, especially if they were nonstop flights and got to their destination and, like me, and got out of the way, they were very blessed because I could already see Seattle this morning. I got through security at 4:10 this morning, and you know, I have TSA pre-check, so I zoom through pretty quickly in most cases. But I would say the line at 4:10 was already about 15 to 20 minutes long, and people were streaming into the airport in hordes. So I have no doubt that the same thing. At Sacramento today, I noticed one of the two trams that shuttle people out to the new terminal was not working this morning. So
uh-oh.
I hope they got that work fixed sometime today. But anyway, things were going well.
I never thought about that. If the tram that takes you to where the planes are isn't functional or vice versa, what do they do?
Well, it's set up. If you notice when you go out there, it's set up you could walk to the terminal. They would they could open the doors and allow you. There is a pathway that with the tram trolley tracks there that would allow you to
is it actually on the trolley tracks?
Well,
or is it like on the ground?
No, it's on the tracks. It's elevated.
Oh, and
it's,
my. Okay. Yeah, so I don't think I've ever noticed that.
No, but usually, I mean, there have been a few instances like today where only one was operating. But did you have a nice Thanksgiving?
Did. Had a fabulous Thanksgiving. My daughter was the hosted, and I kind of kicked around in the kitchen. Always enjoyed doing that.
Your daughter was the hosted in your wife's kitchen.
No, in her own.
Oh, in her own kitchen. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we had a swell time. Very traditional, all family together, and shared a great meal and some great conversation. You know, a lot of people will complain about certain members of their family who are rude or falling asleep in front of the TV and
or
so
drink
forth.
Too much.
I have to, that too. I have to say that our family is great everybody loves everybody. There's nobody that we want to kick out.
Well, maybe,
except for some of them that might want to kick me out.
Maybe you could take a video of one of your family gatherings, and we could show that. We could for people whose families are a little less functional. My family generally doesn't gather together on holidays as a group unless we're in a public place, because then that guarantees that people's behavior will have to reach a certain minimum level. Or the police will be called. So it's not always good. I took some folks up to Jackson.
I was going to ask you about that. You know, you and I were texting back and forth and as to what are you doing and what am I doing? And you mentioned the National Hotel in Jackson. Tell me about it.
I took 42 people, and we had some folks who, Sports Leisure Travelers, who lived up in the Jackson area who just came down to join us there. So we had a big crowd of about 50 people. The first time the National Hotel had done a holiday meal in a few years, and they did a very nice buffet for us. You know what was really wonderful about the meal at the National Hotel in Jackson was it wasn't super fancy. You know, I mean, there wasn't, you know, a violinist playing and all that stuff. It's an old historic hotel. It has a lot of nooks and crannies, and it's a wonderful building, but it's not made for a big, you know, it doesn't have a big ballroom or something like that. But that we had the best dinner. I mean, we had, you know, turkey and all the trimmings, and I think there was beef, and yeah, there was a round of beef the gentleman was carving, and the food was just really, really good. You know, sometimes you go to big buffets, and it tastes like just about everything came out of a box or a can or a bag.
Or all tastes the same.
Yeah, exactly. And we had the best dinner up there. So if you get a chance to go up and just dine up there with Chuck and the folks at the National Hotel. Stan Lukowitz, buddy of mine who owns the hotel now, along with a good part of that side of Jackson, came by to say hello. And it was just a really nice occasion. We had our 50 folks ate. And then my understanding was as soon as we left about 3 o'clock that about 160 more people filled the dining room, all corners of the dining room until 9 o'clock. At night there. So we really had a good, it was a perfect day. You know, Thanksgiving Day around here was, there was no rain, there was no wind. It was just 55, 60 degrees and really nice. It was a great day to make a 45-minute trip up to Jackson and just be able to enjoy that old hotel. Had a nice tour of the, historical tour of the hotel. Told us about all the artwork. Stanley's bought a bunch of artwork and put it on the walls and stuff. And he really has fixed up the old hotel. It really is worth a trip. If you're looking for someplace fun to Christmas shop, you know, the old Highway 49 now doesn't go through Sutter Creek anymore. It's a bypass. So to go through Sutter Creek in Amador City, you have to make a turn and purposefully go there, which to me is kind of cool because parking was always very tough in Sutter Creek anyway.
Right.
And now you've gotten the casual folks away. So Sutter Creek and Jackson and Amador City are just some of my favorite places.
Now, if folks want to go up to the National Hotel, you dropped some names there. Who should they ask for?
I don't know.
And be sure to tell them that Mark and the Travel Guy
sent
you.
This wasn't like a formal plug or anything like that. It was just it's the National Hotel is if the food that they serve up there for regular occasions is as good as the food they served us for Thanksgiving, why then it's a good place to go and eat. We best get on with the travel news here. We're going to run out
should.
Of time.
Okay, we are the Travel Guys and we do the travel news. Top of each Travel Guys radio show.
Unless we sit here and talk for 20 minutes and then we never get around.
Okay, give me about 3 minutes of travel news. What do you got?
3 minutes? Okay, Delta, if you're a Delta traveler, my general manager Kevin likes to fly on Delta. Their lounge memberships are going up 10% next year. If you're somebody who likes to, you know, you like to go and in between, Clayton likes to do that, the United Lounge. He'll go 20 minutes, he'll walk 20 minutes to the lounge to get a free cookie and walk 20 minutes back to his gate because that represents, he's probably listening. I'll probably hear about this. Glenn Close is coming back to Broadway in Sunset Boulevard. And I mention this for two reasons. One is because I'm taking a group to see this show in May, along with some other wonderful things in New York City. But if you love the theater and you didn't see this the first time around, Glenn Close starred in 1994. She won a Tony Award. She has three of them. And she played Norma Desmond on Broadway, and she's going to do it again. It's only 16 weeks. It's the previews start the beginning of February, and the opening is the next week. We are going to go see it in late April, but if you have the opportunity, I just one of the best things I ever saw on Broadway was seeing Glenn Close as Norma Desmond in Sunset Boulevard. It's an old movie, wonderful classic old movie, you know, with a great line, "I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille." And Glenn Close, that was one of the great Broadway performances I ever saw. So if you can get tickets to go see her, it's only for 4 months, so don't wait around a long time or you won't see it. United Airlines is having a pretty good airfare sale, and the reason I mention this is because it goes all the way up until May of 2017. I have bought some tickets myself on it this week, so and the prices are pretty reasonable. It's good Monday through Thursday and Saturday, so every day except Friday and Sunday. Through the end of November, all the way up until May, there are a few blackout dates. Go to united.com to check it. Most of the other carriers, when one carrier has a good sale, of the other carriers match.
There you go.
If you're not flying United, you might check your own favorite. Cleveland. This year, I took a group of people on a mystery tour, and we went to the house where the Christmas Story was filmed.
There you go.
Do you know there's a hotel in Cleveland that has created a suite that is decorated like the inside of the house for A Christmas Story? And you can go there stay in the suite, and then you can get, there's discounted tickets for the play. The Christmas Story, of course, is done in Cleveland every year, duh. And then you can go tour the Christmas Story house, includes tickets for that. So if you were a fan of Ralphie and the rifle and the lake lamps.
You know, that speaking of that house, I was up at Sutter Street.
Uh-huh.
Did a little shopping with some out-of-town family over the... In fact, we went yesterday. And right there on one of the little shelves was a Christmas ornament. And the ornament was the house.
Ah, cool, cool, cool. I am really glad that we went there. And I still regret the fact that I didn't buy a leg lamp. And I'm going to. I'm going to get one and buy. I'm going to have a leg lamp from the Christmas Story. Everybody, you should have a leg. Everybody knows what those mean.
Lucille's, which is a great little restaurant up in Lincoln, there, and has a leg lamp in the bar. I always have to check it out when I go.
A free plug for Lucille's. Chicago airport workers are going to strike on Tuesday. They talked about doing it over Thanksgiving. These are the minimum wage people who clean the airport and deliver the food and all that kind of stuff. People who you will notice them in a matter of a few hours when they aren't working. They're going to strike Tuesday. They said they weren't trying to inconvenience people over the holidays. So instead of striking over the holidays, they decided to wait until after the holidays. I thought that was a pretty nice move on their part. All right, quickly here, the Galt City Council has put up historic signs marking the city's route on the Lincoln Highway.
Awesome.
Cities all over the Central Valley are doing that. And here is kind of a cool story. We'll save this Fidel Castro travel story for later on in the show, but here's a quick note. An Irish waiter was lamenting, an American working at an American restaurant in Texas was lamenting to a customer that he wanted to get home to travel home to see his family for Christmas and how he wasn't going to be able to get there and stuff like that. The guest left him a $750 tip that said, "Hopefully, this can help you get back to Ireland for the holidays." Is that not cool? 22-year-old Ben Millar is the gentleman who got the tip, and the customer identified only as Jeffrey, and left the restaurant before they could connect.
Cool story.
Is that cool or
all
what?
All right, Bob Sims joins us next on the Travel Guys. Welcome, everyone. You've got the Travel Guys on the radio. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And for some time now, I've been wanting to have this gentleman on Travel Guys to kind of make you a smarter traveler if you're an outdoors folk. And that would be Bob Sims, host of the Outdoor Show here on KFBK for, gosh, probably almost longer than anyone. Bob, welcome to the Travel Guys.
It's a pleasure, and I think it's going to be fun to be here. Thank you.
Bob, summertime isn't the only time to enjoy the outdoors here in Northern California. Give our listeners a list of places to go and things to do here in Northern California during the wintertime.
You know, there's actually quite a lot to do, but, you know, you almost have to separate it between the fishermen and the hunters and the others because the activities will be so different. I mean, The hunters in this time of year in the valley has the waterfowl season, and the fishermen and the upland game season, you know, pheasants and quail and turkeys. And then the fishermen are kind of waiting for the steelhead runs, the big winter steelhead runs that, of course, they'll come up the American River, the Feather, the Yuba, and the Sacramento. But I think the masses, even for outdoor recreation, head to the coast because it gets, you know, it's cool over there in the summer. Well, it gets freezing cold with all our fog here in the winter, and all of a sudden it's warmer along the coast. And so Monterey, of course, is a true destination with its, let's start with all the golf courses down there, and they're quite reasonable in the winter months. Of course, you've got the aquarium, you've got the old Fisherman's Wharf on Monterey. They do whale watching trips all winter long. They've got the humpback and the blue whales now, and then the gray whales start to appear later on in December and early January. And generally, it's just, you can just imagine Monterey right now. What a beautiful place to drive along the coast.
And, of course, this time of the year, unlike the summertime, you don't have to deal with all of that, the fog that's drawn in by the heat here in the valley. So your recommendation is if you want to get out and spend some time in the outdoors off to the coast, do you have a preference, the north coast versus further south? And with that being said, how far south would you go?
Monterey is just about it for me, but I'm a little different. I like to kind of stay away from the people. And, of course, the further south you go, the more people you run into. But there's plenty to do on the north coast. If you ever take a ride on a weekend, like say in December or January in Marin County and Sonoma County and up in Mendocino County, people are not staying home. There's all kinds of lodging. There's trailer parks where you can bring your motorhome, your travel trailer, your camper. The Dungeness crab season is open, and so there's fresh crab everywhere. You can go out on boats for a nominal cost and get your own crab. Of course, they do it for you, but mm-hmm. you get the crab. And then, of course, you get up to the towns like Mendocino. It's just so quaint and artistic, and there's plenty of restaurants and shopping. And into Fort Bragg and down in Noyo Harbor, where all the boats go out whale watching this time of year or a little bit later on up there. And then there's McCarricker State Park, which is a year-round destination for a lot of people. You can go up and stay in a motel and spend a whole day at McCarricker State Park, which is just north of Fort Bragg, because of its beauty and its history and a unique landscape it has along the coast.
Bob, you know, in the summertime when people want to get up camping and hit those spots, they have to plan ahead and book and reserve locations way in advance. How about this time of the year?
I'd say it would be pretty easy to get it. You know, some of the more famous places you might have a little trouble with, but there is plenty of lodging in all price ranges, and all you have to do is either call or get on the internet and go to the County Chamber of Commerce, and that will lead you the way, and you probably have friends that have been over there that have their favorite places, their favorite restaurants, but there's no shortage of lodging. I mean, we could call up probably one or two days before the weekend and be very happy with the lodging we get over there.
Awesome. For those that may not have caught the outdoor show on KFBK over the years, Bob, tell them what the outdoor show's all about and what it is that they can expect to hear on a weekly basis.
Well, it runs from 5 to 8 Saturday mornings and has for about 26 years now. And we concentrate mostly on hunting and fishing, both this time of year. In the spring and summer, it's mostly fishing. But we also deal with a lot of history, because think of where you go, where you do those two things. Historic places are all over California, and we talk a little bit about that and the geology. And I mean, California is a fabulous, fabulous place to just be outdoors. And we look at all these rocks and formations and wonder how they got there and who was here before us and all that. And we talk a little bit about that as part of our destinations. And then we get a little bit into water issues, which is very political in California because, let's face it, those water issues affect the environment and our natural resources like salmon and steelhead and sturgeon. So we do a little bit of everything. But most of it, it's trying to help you and your kids or your friend, or if you're just all by yourself, where to go to be successful in fishing and hunting.
Awesome. One last question before we let you go. You were mentioning the salmon run, steelhead, and so forth. I know some of our listeners might be interested in how things are coming back after the drought. What do we have going on? You got some positive stories for us?
Well, I wish the answer could be yes there. But the salmon have really been affected. The water diverters want to blame the drought, but the fact is it's been excessive amounts of water diversions that have hurt the salmon more than anything else. And with the way the Westlands Water District is such a political organization, being the largest reclamation district in the country, they have a lot of clout in Washington. We're constantly trying to fight for just enough water for these fish to survive. And as of right now, the fish are losing. I mean, the winter run salmon because of, I hate to say it, but just purely mismanagement by the Bureau of Reclamation the last 2 years, they wiped out 2/3 of the run. It's a 3-year fish. If they don't have a good year this year, we may be looking at extinction. But all salmon species and steelhead and sturgeon, most of the fish in the Delta are affected by the water diversions.
Bob, thanks for spending some time here with the Travel Guys. Catch you in the morning on the show, and we'll look forward to talking to you again in the spring about outdoor activities and places to go here in California. Thanks. Bob Sims on the Travel Guys.
Thank you, Tom. My pleasure.
Follow along with the Travel Guys, by the way, at travelguysradio.com. Links to pretty much everything we talk about here on the radio you'll find there. All right, coming up after we find out what's going on in the news, Mark and I have kind of a different opinion about pets on planes.
Dogs and cats. Now, wait a minute, turn on your microphone, Mark. Dogs and cats and large animals, gorillas and zebras and giraffes and all this stuff.
And we're going to share some of the madness in about 3.5 minutes here on KFBK.
You can travel by road. You can fly by plane. You can take
back on the radio, Mark and Tom,
yes.
Brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. We are the travel and entertainment guys.
I wanted to ask Carolyn there if there was, because she was talking about how lawyers are not supposed to have relations
now.
With their clients.
Can, go easy.
Can are radio hosts not supposed to get friendly with their guests or their listeners? Or what about the news people? Are they not allowed to interact with the weather people? Or can a news person date a weather person? Or is
only,
that not considered
only,
to be?
Number one, only if you're not already related to them.
I see.
And you're not supervising them.
So
otherwise,
about,
it's that quid pro quo thing.
Uh-huh.
You haven't taken the...
Remember Dave Walker and Lois Hart from Channel 3 back in the day?
Yeah, that's different.
Then
TV
they went
is
to
completely
CNN
different.
And, oh, well, that's
yeah,
okay.
You can, everything goes
everything
on TV.
Everything goes on TV as long as you can't see it up
remind
on the
Remind me, I have to set you up with your opportunity to take the iHeartMedia Code of Conduct...
oh, my God.
Test exam.
It's
mandatory,
probably,
you know, for everybody that goes on the radio.
Probably feel that, too.
Yeah, I forgot to tell you that, didn't
what
I?
What are you looking at there?
Hey, this is a great book. This is the book that you brought back from your visit to San Francisco to see Anthony Bourdain the Hunger Tour. And I know that this is your personal copy because he scribbled his... autograph in
Isn't
it.
Isn't that
but...
cute the way they had him sign those? They had him sign stickers, and then they put the stickers inside the book.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's how they
anyway,
do it.
The photos in this this book, what's it, Appetites, a cookbook.
Yeah.
And the...
That was a great show.
The
if
photos of the food
ever get
and
a
recipes
chance
are awesome. Tell us about it.
Do you ever get a chance to see Anthony Bourdain in person? That was the most entertaining 90 minutes. What did it cost? It wasn't cheap here. I didn't get in for free. It was $125, but I got a book out of it. But it was a really entertaining. I can't tell you the last time he doesn't. I mean, he doesn't talk all that clean. I mean, he likes to use the F word and some other things. And
his brutally honest monologue.
Well, and he talked.
Reflecting on diverse culture.
It was fun.
Street cuisine.
It was fun. And it was about him.
And his travels.
And then he did like about 30 minutes of Q&A with the audience, and it was a lot of fun. A little protest there at the beginning. And we had some protesters.
Yeah, speaking of street food, what's a street taco?
What's a street taco?
Yeah.
Well, it's like it's
everybody
different.
Sells them.
Yeah, they do.
Well, what is the
well,
defining
generally
difference?
Generally, it's a soft shelled taco, and it's kind of sometimes it's smaller than the taco that you would have bought in a restaurant or a store. It probably doesn't have a crispy shell, and it's a gimmick. Yeah,
exactly. Gimmick. I've had them, and
well, how did we get on street? From the book.
They should just stay on the street.
All right. Anyways, next up here on the Travel Guys, the show has come to a screeching halt here. What do we got here? We are talking about, what does Andy want?
Let's see. We got to be out by 46.
Oh, okay.
To be able to get in our pre-recorded.
This is all technical stuff. Yeah. Okay. Anyways, Andy looks after this stuff.
Anything you bring us, by the way, Andrew, we will talk about
on the air.
Exactly. So be careful there.
As Carolyn just found out a few minutes ago, the Travel Guys are just really... really desperate for material. Well, we're not desperate for material.
Actually, next time, Andrew, you can just open your mic and just tell us.
It'd be fine with us, yes.
On the air?
Yeah. On the air, Andrew. That'll be fine.
Sure. All right. Back to talking about animals on planes.
This came into the Travel Guys. I've traveled 3 times within the U.S., plus outside the U.S. each year. I've been retired since late 2013. I fly Southwest, except for a few locations. Don't like the service animal idea, rule, law, because there are so many abusers, pigs, fowl, reptiles, online certificates, and yes, the exception that as a reasonable, polite, courteous passenger, I'm supposed to grin and bear it or move. No apologies extended. However, if, like you stated, my last 4 flights this year were fully booked and no one could have been able to move to another seat. There's no provision for humans with allergies. It's become more socially acceptable to accommodate animal lovers over people. Have you ever been in an elevator with dogs trying to lick all those captured crotches? Oh, he's just friendly. I have been fortunate to only come across a service animal one time, a puppy that was out of its carrier as soon as we took off and was passed around to passengers all oohing and awing over it. The flight attendants were helpless to enforce keeping it in the carrier. They were outnumbered. Thanks to the ending to your story. Sorry for this long response. That was Connie who wrote into Travel Guys. This is off of Chris Elliott's Elliott.org. My wife, who has severe asthma, had 2 recent incidents regarding the above issue about emotional support animals on commercial flights, most recently Delta to Detroit. Upon leaving the gate, there was an announcement that no peanuts would be served since there was a passenger with a peanut allergy. Sitting next to my wife was a passenger with a small dog, which was classified as serving emotional support to the owner. My wife spoke with the flight attendant, informing her of her allergy to dogs. The flight attendant told my wife it was her responsibility to ask other passengers if they were willing to change their seat with her. No one was willing. Fortunately, there was an empty seat, suitable distance from the animal. My wife was told that she would have to deplane and arrange for a later flight if this had not been available.
Wow.
Let's see. There's some other ones here. I was a flight attendant for 45 years for a major U.S. airline. I can tell you without a doubt, this emotional support animal is probably the biggest bunch of hooey ever forced upon the airline industry. Probably 98% of the time, it's used by people who want to take Fido or Kitty along because they don't want to board them. Boarding fees now range an average of $25 to $50 a night.
No.
The price many
90,
are
unwilling
to pay.
More.
And many simply do not want to board their pet. I've heard of some ladies trying to board their husbands. Also, it's understandable that many do not want to ship their animals, one, because of cost, and two, because of certain months and weather conditions. Animals are no longer accepted for shipment because it's too dangerous for the animal. So they bring them on board the aircraft. Yes, I've had that big Dalmatian on a flight to Europe, no less. Extended hours trying to work around a big animal that protruded out into our work area. No, we didn't want to hurt or run over his legs sticking out in the aisle. We were animal lovers, too. And she just goes on.
That same Dalmatian that you flew with, huh?
No, that was a Great Dane.
Oh, Great Dane.
You know, this is a lady certification. She's a... I just finished your article reading, Let's Ban Support Animals from the Skies, Total Agreement, Service Dog. So this lady has a legitimate service animal. that she travels with on planes. When I travel and I see pregnant people bring their dogs, cats, or whatever on the plane, I wonder why. My service dog has a vest and certification papers on her. When I make reservations, I would indicate that I have a service dog. My last flight, a lady in my row had her cat in a cage. No problem for me, but when the cat decided to go to the bathroom, I did have a problem. The smell was obnoxious, and the lady did nothing to correct the problem. So I don't understand. I, honest to God, Thomas, I don't understand why people have to have an animal in the cabin of the aircraft. I'm okay with service animals, legitimate service animals.
Well, what about people that are just going from point A to point B?
Uh-huh.
They have an animal that falls under the category of under 20 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
They pay nearly $100. They carry it in a carrier.
Right.
The dog or cat is not taken out of the carrier. They go under the seat in front of you. You never see it. You would hardly even know it was there unless somebody brought it to your attention.
I would be okay with that.
Are you okay with
that? I'm okay with that.
No,
but what's happened is those animals are now outside the carrier in the airport going for walks all over the place.
Yeah,
passed around, and it has no purpose. It's not. Animals have things, diseases, things that humans aren't, you know, I mean, not everybody is, and the idea of a dog walking up and licking you isn't appealing to everyone. And when you get on an airplane and you've bought a seat, you're entitled to that space, that your space, and someone's animal shouldn't be in part of that space, nor should you, as a passenger, have to be concerned if you have a dog or a cat allergy about being on a plane with a dog or a cat that you weren't informed of. The lady's point is very well taken. They go to all of these steps to make sure some damn person on a plane with a peanut allergy doesn't have a problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But where is that? And here's what the airlines will tell you. They don't like the position that they're in. They don't want to get in trouble. They don't want to be go viral before denying somebody an animal. So they err on the side of being, well, you know, let's just let everybody on board. And they would prefer that you not be able to bring the animals on board either. And it's important to know that service animals perform a specific duty for their owners. They are not emotional support animals. They specifically perform duties for the people who are their owners. So a service animal can be easily separated from an emotional support animal, and businesses should not be afraid of doing that, because there are laws that protect people with service animals that do not protect people with, quote, emotional support animals. Next time I go into Raley's and there's a dog in the cart going around the store, I'm going to find another store to shop in. That's just the way it is.
There you go. Well, we'll see how this all pans out with the airlines, because it seems to be a hot topic.
If you have any comments, if you have some feelings on this, if you agree with me or you disagree with me strongly, you can go to travelguysradio.com. You can leave a comment there, and I promise you, your comment will be read on the air next week.
There you go. Okay, we are the Travel Guys here on KFBK, and coming up in just about 4 minutes, we're going to take you along a little bit of a journey with, an around-the-world trip.
Scavenger hunt.
That is actually a scavenger hunt at the same time. That's next on The Travel Guys. You're traveling with The Travel Guys here on KFVK. Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, here every Sunday 3 to 4. We're going to delve into a subject that, well, we've talked about before. And that is something that I think just about everybody that listens to this show, their ears will perk up and they'll get a smile on their face and say, you mean there's such a thing as the global scavenger hunt, where you travel the world on a scavenger hunt? Introduce our guest, Mark.
Absolutely. And our listeners are probably a little bit familiar with this, because if you remember, one of my tour operator friends, Sue Biggs, and her daughter did the scavenger hunt last year. And so the opportunity to talk to the man who puts them together, it's about to make its 13th appearance, the Global Scavenger Hunt. William Chalmers, Bill Chalmers, is with us on the line. Hi, Bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark and Tom, for having me. Please call me Bill. And it's our Baker Dozens edition, I've been told, not our 13th edition.
Okay. So, Bill, I'm curious as heck, having talked with Sue about the thing before and after, and what her trials and tribulations were, and what she thought the highlights were and stuff like that. I think she was really glad that she went. How did the Global Scavenger Hunt come into being?
Well, that's a good question. Thanks for asking. You know, in 1989, if we can all remember back to a different time in a different era, I saw a little blurb sitting on a Pan Am airline flying from London to New York, and it said travel adventure around the world. And I saw it and it perked up my ears. It was like a Phineas Fogg type 80 days around the world adventure. I was lucky enough to enter that event back in 1989. It was called the Human Race, and we had some check-in points, and we had to circle the globe on public transportation. And I entered it. I ended up winning the event. And ever since then, I always wanted to participate in another event like it. Nothing was developed. Nothing came around. And about 13 years after that, I created the Global Scavenger Hunt with my partner and decided to merge my love of travel with my love of philanthropy.
Now, Bill, how many people participate in the scavenger hunt each year? Is it limited in number, or is it just as many people who want to go, or is it set up to only be for a specific number of folks?
Yes, it's specific number of folks. We find 15 teams of two. So we have the winners of last year's event, Zoe and Rainey. They're from Texas. They're called Lawyers Without Borders. Great travelers. They will be defending their title against 15 other teams from different countries in the world. We get applications from all over the world. We do interview people. I remember Sue and Wendy very well. They were very, very savvy travel, smart people, been in the travel business many years. And so they were ready to test their mettle out there with other travelers.
Bill, the Global Travel Hunt has been referred to as a blind date with the world. Explain why that is.
Well, that's one of our best features, and we have a lot of them, but it is a truly exhilarating feeling. The folks that participate in this event, they're signing up, they're going around, they're going to circumnavigate the world. So they are going to go around the world in one trip. We tell them we're going to be visiting 10 countries during that, but we don't tell them which 10 countries, hence the blind date with the world. And the reason we do that, guys, is because we want it to be truly challenging for everybody. We don't want everybody to do all their research and going online and having things. We want them to know 4 hours before they get on an airplane where they're going to next. So when they hit the ground in the next country we go to, they have to deal with the language barriers, the cultural nuances, the logistics snafus, all the issues that good travelers have to deal with. And that's why it truly is the World Travel Championship.
Can you give us an example of some of the scavenger hunts that you've had over the last several years?
Well, sure. Each one is different, guys. We've been to over 70 countries since we've started this thing. You know, some countries are very big, so they lend themselves to visiting them multiple times. China is very big. India is very big. Australia, different countries in Europe and such. But when we're in those countries, they're given a booklet. And that booklet probably contains more than they can possibly do in that region that we're in. But it's up to them to devise a strategy to go out and do scavenges. You know, there's a reward system, a risk reward system, that the more risk you take, the bigger the reward will be. For instance, real quickly, I do remember last year, Wendy and Sue were the only team. We were in Singapore, and I asked the team as one scavenge for all of them that they were going to get bonus points if they were able to visit 3 countries in one day. And they were the only team that were able to visit 3 countries in one day.
Wow.
And they started out their day. They went from Singapore to Malaysia. They came back to Singapore, and then they got on a ferry and went in the afternoon ferry to Indonesia and then back to Singapore.
Bill, can I ask you a memorable moment, a unique situation, something that happened on one of the scavenger hunts that you can legally talk about that might be entertaining or interesting?
Absolutely. One of the things is it's all about cultural interaction, and that's one of the most unique and fun parts about it. One thing I call is taxi cab roulette. And taxi cab roulette is they go to a taxi driver and ask him to take you to the place he eats most often. And usually they take them to a little place sitting on the side of the road where they meet their other mates and they have a meal and share a beer maybe or a cup of coffee. But on one particular event last year in Oman, that's Oman. They went and asked the taxi cab driver to take them to a restaurant. He took them home, and they had a family meal with the taxi cab driver's family and got to know about the nuances of the culture, sitting on the floor, using their hands, eating, and spending time with the family. And it truly was an enriching experience.
Wow, sounds like an Anthony Bourdain show.
That is unique. Let me ask you, Bill, if you don't know where you're going, what about visas?
Well, that's a good question also. Visas have become much easier in the world. A lot of places, even China and India, that used to require the having to send your passports to Washington, the embassy, and get a visa. Now they have visas on arrival, and more countries are savvying up to that because tourism, as you guys know, is the largest business in the world. It employs 1 out of 10 people in the world, and it is huge for folks. So you got to break down barriers, not build walls for folks to not be able to travel to places. And so visas are easy. Very rarely do we have a problem where we have to get a visa prior to going in there. That is something we research before we go, and we make sure if we do, everybody knows to get one at the same time and is given ample time to do so. Shots is the other question we get asked, and again, we research everything. We let everybody know what they should be up to date on. But for the most part, everything that people do on the natural traveling to developing countries, they're pretty much covered.
Well, it's good, Tom, isn't it, to know that people don't get shot at? You meant shots. You were talking about a different kind of shot. Bill, before we let you go, if folks wanted to participate in the Global Scavenger Hunt, we'll have a link to the website, globalscavengerhunt.com, on Travel Guys. So if you're interested, you can look this up later. But tell us what it costs and how people get signed up.
Sure. Just you go to our website, globalscavengerhunt.com. You had it down there. You apply. There's an application form on there. Once you apply, you'll be hearing from us. We'll set up an interview with you. We'll talk to you, understand your travel bona fides. The price for a team, it's called an entry fee because it is a competition, and the entry fee is $25,000 for two people, and that includes all your international airfare around the world, 23 nights in great hotels that we stay in, about 40% of your meals, and a lot of stuff and swag and things we get from sponsors and stuff like that. So we put together great travel packages for everybody.
Okay, outstanding. Well, if you're interested in the adventure of a lifetime, if you're one of those folks who you just can't find the experience that you're looking for, I suspect that you might find it here, the Global Scavenger Hunt. Bill, thank you so much for your time today and for telling us a little bit about this. And we'll probably double back to you after the 13th Scavenger Hunt and see how it went.
Well, thank you so much, guys. I enjoyed the day. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy. We appreciate it for joining us here on the Travel Guys.
A scavenger hunt to go around the world. Remember, we talked to Sue and her daughter and about that. That's pretty cool. I don't know
it
that
is.
I wouldn't spend that much money. I wouldn't, because I'm not that adventurous. But there are lots of people probably listening to
Absolutely.
This program. If you end up on the Global Scavenger Hunt, you need to come back and talk to us. All right, we're running out of time here as usual. I wanted to talk in some detail about the passing of Fidel Castro and what that does for traveling to Cuba, because Mr. Trump has a different opinion than what Mr. Obama had. We'll talk about that next week. One of our people wrote in and said he has an RV. Are you guys aware of a good RV trip from Baja to San Diego? If you know about a good RV trip from Baja to San Diego, would you go to TravelGuysRadio.com and maybe send us a note? We would appreciate it.
Is there any relationship between people that are adventuresome eaters that would eat all kinds of stuff, you know, maybe like squid soup, and people that are adventuresome travelers? We're going to talk about it next week right here on the Travel Guys. In the meantime, Mark, have a great week.
Thank you, sir. Same to you.
And to all of our listeners, a belated again, happy Thanksgiving and a Merry Christmas ahead. And stay safe. See you next week.